we had the good ambition in Milford back in the day. You know, we would have had a lot of All-Ireland champions coming through at a young age. So I always had high expectations for what I could achieve, even as a young fella. But then, you know, when you move into the senior world, then you kind of realise what it really takes to get to this level. And then once you kind of make it once, then it's about maintaining then, I suppose, for the second Olympics.
And how did it all begin down in Milford? What did you start competing at? It wasn't probably race walking.
No, I started in the shorter events. You know, would have been under eights in the community games. I would have done the 60-meter sprint. I would have been second in the All Irelands as an under eight, and then I would have kept sprinting kind of up to under 10, under 12, and then the first year there was a race walking event was under 13, so I kind of jumped in then when I was 12, started race walking, and kind of caught the bug for that event and stuck with it then after that.
So you started around about 12 at race walking?
Yeah.
And, well, it was probably reasonably popular at the time. You know, there were a number of good walkers in Donegal competing at a high level.
Yeah, I remember James Gibbons and Anne McGill, and they were competing kind of internationally at a good level. So you look up to those athletes, and I remember James Gibbons coming back from European Championships with medals, and thinking that, you know, if this fella can do it, then, you know, maybe I can do it as well. So it was good to have a little introduction to race walking at a local level, and they were also competing internationally. So you have that mindset kind of straight away that if you're going to be competing at all, you're going to be aiming for racing in an international setting.
So that gave you the bug, and I suppose it went from there. And were you competitive at underage level?
Not really. I kind of took a long time to develop into the event. Like, I would have been kind of coming second and third at national underage level for many years. I think I only won my first national title at under 19. But I didn't wear an Irish vest until I was 24 years of age. So it was kind of a long process to get to that level. I only did my first international race in 2011, so only about 15 months before the Olympic Games in London.
So you're, well, would we say a slow developer, or was it just your determination, your ability to stay with that sport, to train hard, that got you where you are?
I think it was probably a bit of stubbornness carried me through. So I would have trained, like, you know, even as a junior, you know, I would have trained, you know, every day and kind of been tipping away. So then when I moved to the UK then when I was 20 years old, and I found a coach that was specializing in race walking. So I kind of, I managed to get to him at the age of 20 with a good kind of training base in my legs. And then once I got into a system where there was proper coaching and there was other athletes doing race walking at an international level, then it didn't take me too long after that to kind of reach the international stage. So I think it's important that people understand, you know, the training levels. You know, I would have considered myself that I was training hard as a junior, but I wasn't really making international level. And then when you see what it takes to make it as a senior athlete, you know, and you see the structures, and it's not just about, you know, you as an athlete, you need coaching, you need proper support around you to reach that level. You know, it's very, very difficult if you're on your own, which I was for a lot of years.
Well, the last time we spoke to you, one of the last times, you were going to join the Rob Heffernan group of walkers down in Cork. You know, that's what you did. What does that involve, and, you know, how is it working out for you?
After the London Olympics, I think just before London, I went on a training camp with Rob. So we went out to Spain for 4 weeks in the summer before London, and it was almost a shock to the system to see how hard he trained and the system he had around him, where he had coaches and physios, and it was kind of very, very new to me, even though I was going to an Olympic Games his system was so professional. And then once I saw what he did in London, he came fourth, and now it's been, obviously that's been upgraded to an Olympic bronze medal. So as soon as the London Games were over, I gave it a couple of weeks for the excitement to die down, and I sent Rob a text, and I just asked him, you know, would he be willing to take me on as an athlete and let me train with him and stuff. So I think it took about 2 weeks before a reply to come through, but he must have thought about it a lot, but he got back to me, and kind of the rest is history, as they say. He coached me and I moved to Cork, and that's the way it's been ever since.
What is happening down in Cork? Tell me, what are you doing now that you weren't doing, and how hard is the training?
I think the main difference is just the training focus. So, and the routine that we have. You know, when I was training before London, I was still studying, so you'd kind of be in and out of college. You'd have to work your training around other schedules, and now once you're training full time, all the time, you're dedicated to the schedule of being an athlete and training that way. So you're training twice a day, at least twice a day, most days, and then you're coming into the gym as well. So you could be training three times a day and getting physio as well. So it's a full day schedule then when you're training and working at that level.
For example, for the walks that you would do, how that training, you know, how long would you be actually walking?
We were out again. We were prepping in Spain again, so we spent 4.5 weeks in the mountains in Sierra Nevada in the south of Spain. So generally we train, we do all our harder training in the morning. So we get up early and try and beat the sun up. So we get up at about 7:30 for breakfast and stuff, and we try and be on the road training for 9:30. So it's not super hot, but even some of the days we do, the longest session we have in training is 40K, so you're still out on the road for, I think it was just over 3 hours and 10 minutes for a 40K session. So that's the kind of intensity you'd have in the morning, and then in the evening you'd do 30, kind of 40 minutes max in the evening. Just if you're training really hard in the morning, you need to, you know, you can't just go and rest for the whole day, your legs will stiffen up. So the evening session is almost just to get the body moving again before the next morning, so you're going to train hard again.
So part of that training in Spain, is it for the benefit of the fact that you're going to compete in the heat, and tell us of the benefits of altitude training?
Especially for kind of longer endurance events, you know, it's your aerobic profile that'll help you in the event. So the amount of oxygen you can take on board during the race is important. So when we go and train at altitude, there's less oxygen, so your body has to adjust even more to the training. So when you come back to sea level, then, you know, when you have more oxygen in the air, your body should be able to use it better. So you kind of improve your fitness that way and get better results then when you come to race.
And you got those benefits. Were you involved in using an oxygen tent out there?
No, I spent the month of June. I have an altitude tent here in Cork. So I spent 5 weeks in an altitude tent before we went to Spain. And I'm back in it again now for another 10 days. So I'll have basically spent the last 11 weeks at some kind of altitude getting ready to go to Rio.
Explain the oxygen tent that you have in Cork. What does that do?
Yeah, you kind of pitch the tent up around the bed, and then there's a generator and a pump that pumps in extra nitrogen into the air so that you reduce the oxygen concentration that way. Instead of, you know, trying to suck the oxygen out, you just pump in extra nitrogen. So you're kind of trying to simulate the conditions you'd have if you're actually at altitude. So you're lessening the oxygen, and your body is working harder then when you sleep. So hopefully you're kind of start to produce more red blood cells and stuff like that, and it should help you. The theory is that it should help.
And do you notice it greatly by just going to sleep and, you know, being in the tent on a regular basis?
I have like oxygen monitors. So if you're in hospital, you get a probe for your finger and it measures your oxygen. So at normal sea level, your blood should be like 98 or 99% saturated. And then when I'm in the tent, it could be down to 90% saturation. So when you get those levels, there's feedback mechanisms in the blood that will tell your body that it needs to make more red blood cells to bring the saturation back up to normal. And then obviously, you know, the training we do is so hard, so you don't really get a massive feel good factor. You know, you're still tired every day, but hopefully now once we get the last session done, I have one more hard training to do now in Cork here on Tuesday, and then we fly out to Rio on Thursday. Then,
is there any danger with that? Is there any danger that the oxygen level would go too low and the nitrogen too high, and could it have an effect, a long term effect?
No, there. You have gauges on the generators and stuff, so the level you can set the level to whatever altitude, so the machine can go from about 1,000 meters altitude to 3,500 meters altitude. So you have the choice to select whatever level you want, and then you have the monitor inside the tent then, so you'd know if there was a problem with the system, there'd be mechanisms there to let you know.
And how important is it that you stop the oxygen levels and go back to sea level, you know, at a certain time, certain distance before you actually compete?
Like there's a window of about a week where, you know, once you're at sea level for more than 1 week, then your body will just adjust back to the normal state it was before. So I'll stay in the tent now till Wednesday, and then I race kind of, I think, 9 days after in Rio. So I'll stay here for as long as possible before I fly to Rio. So hopefully I'll get, on race day then, the maximum benefits will be there on the day.
So is that the reason that you stayed back and didn't join the main party in Rio when they were going out?
It was kind of the way we planned it all year. Me and Rob, we were racing at the end of the program, so we didn't want to be in Brazil for a month, you know, before. I think a lot of the athletes flew out on the 28th of July. We only finished our training camp in Spain on the 31st of July. So we wanted to stay in an environment that we know well and not be going out to Brazil. And, you know, it might take a day or two to get your bearings over there, and you'll miss maybe a day or two training. So it seemed a better option for us to get all of our hard training done either in Spain or in Cork, and then just fly out with a week before and then we go straight into the village. And because we don't have massive training out there, you know, we'll be able to adjust easy enough to the last week of training, you know.